On this cassette, well-known Bible teacher Dr. Ken Conley brings a message entitled Your Personal Encounter with God. Let's go to the King is Coming Auditorium at Colton, California, as Dr. Conley begins the message.
I'm going to ask you to get your Bibles and open them in the book of Genesis and in chapter 32, and I'd like to read a little incident that happened beginning in verse 24. In Genesis chapter 32 and in verse 24, an incident that happened in the life of Jacob. And I wonder if it hasn't happened in our lives. I really think that somehow, if I correctly understand what has taken place in the passage, that I, as a believer in Christ, need to have the same experience in my life. Let me read it for you first of all, and then explain my comment. And Jacob was left alone, Genesis 32:24, and there wrestled a man with him until the breaking of the day. And when he saw that he prevailed not against him, he touched the hollow of his thigh. And the hollow of Jacob's thigh was out of joint as he wrestled with him. And he said, Let me go, for the day breaketh. And he said, I will not let thee go, except thou bless me. And he said unto him, What is thy name? And he said, Jacob. And he said, Thy name shall be called no more Jacob, but Israel. For as a prince hast thou power with God and with men, and hast prevailed. And Jacob asked him and said, Tell me, I pray thee, thy name. And he said, Wherefore is it that thou dost ask after my name? And he blessed him there. And Jacob called the name of the place Peniel, for I have seen God face to face, and my life is preserved. And as he passed over Penuel, the sun rose upon him, and he halted upon his thigh. Therefore the children of Israel eat not of the sinew which shrank, which is upon the hollow of the thigh unto this day, because he touched the hollow of Jacob's thigh in the sinew that shrank. There's no way that I can explain what was taking place here without going back and giving you a little bit of background that leads up to this experience in Jacob's life. First of all, let me say a word about his grandfather, because his grandfather was the beginning of a new nation, a tower of strength, a man of enormous faith. It is impossible to estimate the confidence that Abraham had in God, so that no matter what was happening in his life, he had utter and absolute confidence, unshaken. It's not literally so, but inasmuch as he wrote it and stated it to others, he could have stood on a hillside and shaken his fists at the surrounding nations and said to them, Bless me, and you will be blessed. Or curse me, and you will be cursed. He had absolute confidence that he was in the direct center of the will of God for his life. He took his flocks, and all of his fortunes were tied up in the flock. And he brought them across a stretch of desert, not even knowing where he was going, but simply doing it because his God had convinced him that it was his will. And that's what he wanted him to do. And without fear of consequence, he simply went out and did exactly what his God wanted him to do. On a more recent occasion than that, he took only 318 men. He took four of the world's greatest nations and a confederacy that was formed by these nations, and he went out and fought against them and utterly defeated them. He left them without anything except the clothes they had on their backs and the animals by which they were able to escape. That was the confidence that this man had. And I guess it's not proper even to survey his life without saying there came a moment in his life when his only son born to Sarah was asked by God to be sacrificed on a hillside and his life taken from him. And we don't even know, humanly speaking, why Abraham would obey that kind of a command from God, unless the writer of Hebrews gave us the insight. He was accounting that God was able to raise him up even from the dead, from whence also we receive him in a figure. His confidence in God was so great that he believed, though he had never heard of it and had never seen it before, that were it required for God to be consistent in his promise and his power, then he would have to take his boy back again from the dead. When all this man, you know, he stood so tall in his confidence of faith, he cast a shadow that went out, and if it touched people, it blessed them. If it touched animals, it blessed them. If it even touched dirt, it blessed it. And this boy was only 15 years of age when that giant died. And the one thing that got a hold of him was, oh, that I could fall into the line of his blessing. I don't know what it would cost me. I don't know what it will take. But one thing started eating away on his heart. I want to fall in the line of blessing, so that my granddad's prosperity might fall upon me. I want to be a part of it. I'll never understand what happened here at Penuel unless I understand that background factor. The second factor that I have to understand is that if Abraham was a tower of strength and faith, Isaac was the opposite. Isaac was nothing but a carnal man. And he had lived in his carnal surroundings with no fear of God in his life, with no family devotions, no family altar, no singing of praise. He was purely almost a man of the world. And you would have hardly known that he even knew God. It wasn't something that happened in his life overnight. It was a gradual thing that seemed to get a hold of him. You see, when he was a younger man, there isn't any question in my mind that when he was sacrificed by Abraham, he was old enough he had to cooperate for it. That's how fervent he was in the earlier days of his life. And before his children were born, while they were yet conceived, God came to him with a message and told him that the elder shall serve the younger. But the years have passed by since that occurred. And now that they've passed by, he's forgotten about what God has said. And he's lived almost to the opposite, so that he calls the elder son in and he explains to him that I am old with age and about to go into my reward, and I want to pass my blessing and I want it to fall upon you. Go out into the fields and bring back venison. And he sent the boy out to the fields to bring it back. But his wife overheard what he said. She was a cunning and conniving woman. And she decided she didn't want his verbal blessing to fall upon the older boy. And so she connived with the younger son that he would dress himself in disguises and scent himself with the venison of the field and would go in and deceive the old man and in deceit would get a blessing from him. And the young boy was brought up in that carnal environment. That was the way of life for him. He knew that. It was the circle that he had lived in. And inasmuch as it was for him, it was normal to be carnal. The third observation, which I believe is needed to give background to this truth, is that one of the longest battles in history came through the animosity and bitterness that existed between those two twin brothers, Jacob and Esau. It goes all the way back to the time that they were in the womb of the mother. And the mother became very concerned about it because there were two children that were in her womb and they were fighting with each other. What the cause of the fighting was, she didn't know. But when she went to God and inquired about it, God simply addressed a comment to her, two nations are in your womb. And you're going to have to expect this is going to have to be the pattern of life. The next event that happened was when they were born. It wasn't normal obstetrics. But when the older son had come out first, the younger son came immediately behind him. And he had his hand stretched out, so they had hold of his brother by the heel, and became known as Jacob the heel catcher. It was all part of the same struggle. Then came another day in his life when his brother had come in from the fields and he was famished with hunger. And he had made a sod of pottage, and he said, "Now why don't you give me something to eat?" And he said, "I will give it to you if you will sell me your birthright." And it gives us an insight into his brother. The scripture said he despised his birthright. He was a profane man. And profanus means before the temple, a piece of sacred ground that others would walk around, but he didn't care about the things of God. He trampled on it. And so in a moment, he believed that it would be more valuable for him to get nourishment and take away the hunger pains that were in his stomach than to hold on to the blessing that he was going to get through birth. And then the final time came when, if you remember, in the father's bedroom, that little act of deceit that I've already described for you occurred. And he got a blessing that was given in disguise by his father, and it fell upon him. There he is. You see, nothing now to hide what he wants to do with his brother. I mean, all the previous encounters that he had with his brother, he had ways that he could manipulate him and take the better of him. But now his brother was coming to him with 400 men, and he was scared to death of the encounter that he's going to have to face with his brother. That's the third piece of background I need to evaluate the context of this truth. The fourth piece of background that I need would require that I give you about six different verses, and I'm not going to ask you to study these verses, but if you want to copy them down, just copy them down and let me tell you what the content and the argument is. It's first of all in Genesis 41 and in verse 46, it says that Joseph, that is the son of this man Jacob, Joseph was 30 years old when he stood before Pharaoh, the king of Egypt. Now, that happened before 7 years of plenty, followed by 7 years of famine. And what I'm asking you to direct your attention to are the arithmetic. He was 30 years of age when that started. He'd already been sold by his brethren and had gone into Potiphar's house and from there to prison and had now come before Pharaoh. The second verse is in Genesis 45 and in verse 11, where God said, "There in Goshen I will nourish thee, for yet there are 5 years of famine." Now if there are 5 years of famine, this must be 9 years later, because 7 years of prosperity and 2 years of famine have already passed. So at this point in Joseph's life, he is now 39 years of age. Add to that the information on this verse. This is in Genesis 47 and in verse 9. "The days of the years of my pilgrimage are 130 years. Now if he can say that when Joseph is 39 years of age, then he was 91 years of age when Joseph was born. It doesn't look like I'm going anywhere, but if you'll stay with me, I want to bring you to a conclusion that I think is important in understanding this passage of Scripture that I read. The next verse is taken from Genesis 29 and verse 30. It says that he, Jacob, went in also unto Rachel, and he loved also Rachel more than Leah, and served with him, that is Laban, yet 7 other years. Now, it's not commonly known to us, but you see, Jacob married Rachel and Leah at the same time. He had worked 7 years for Leah, and then finding out that he was deceived, he was given Rachel at the same time on the promise that he would work 7 more years for her. And she was unable to have any children. Suffice it to say that it was at the same time, and it was followed by 7 years of labor, which means that he was with Laban at that time 14 years. Now Genesis 30 and in verse 25. It came to pass when Rachel had borne Joseph that Jacob said unto Laban, send me away that I may go to mine own place. But he wouldn't do it. A dispute came up over the cattle. So that when Joseph was born, he had literally been there for 14 years. And a dispute over cattle would not allow Laban to let Jacob go. And so the last verse in Genesis 31 and in verse 41, thus have I been 20 years in thy house. I have served thee 14 years for thy two daughters and 6 years for thy cattle. We therefore come to the conclusion, if he was 91 years of age when Joseph was born, he was 97 years of age when this incident occurred. He has already left Laban. He is going back now to the land, and he's going to have to face his brother face to face. So that when it happens, this old man that is wrestling with somebody else is 97 years of age. For 97 years, he's been living by trickery. He's been the heel catcher. He's been the carnal man. And there comes a moment when an encounter in his life requires some kind of change. That'll bring me where in the moments that I have left, I will share with you 3 facts about this experience in his life that I believe to be important. And maybe these facts will suggest to us something that can help us to understand and find out, has that experience happened in our lives? The first thing that I suggest to you is the time when it happened. It's not that I'm thinking that he's now 97 years of age. I'm thinking of the fact that when the experience happened with him, all his cards were on the table. You remember he had taken and divided the companies that were with him. He had taken the expendable parts and had put them on the front lines. Then if you remember, he had sent presents. And he sent them by 3 deportations. So that at different times they would come to his brother Esau and they would somehow hopefully melt his heart and make it soft enough for him to be able to come and speak to him instead of having conflict upon sight of each other. Hopefully he had sent them the proper amount. Hopefully he had sent them at exactly the right time. And hopefully the wording that was spoken by the servants would be said in such a convincing way that Esau would listen to that. And so now all his cards are on the table. He has, when that is finished, taken his family to some other secret place. And through the night time he had gotten them across Ford Jabbok so that they were in a secluded and safe place by themselves. He had no other resources to lean on. This is the time when this event takes place.
Please turn this tape over now for the conclusion of Dr. Conley's message.
The second thing that you observe about it is, it now becomes obvious to him that what he has is inadequate for his task. It's not enough that he has done what he has done. You see, he finds himself where if his brother had been hungry, he could get an advantage over him. If there was some way that he could go off into exile and fight him from a distance, he could get an advantage of him. But now he recognizes, I've never had to fight him where he calls the shots, where the issue of the battle is what he can do. I've never had to do that before. And now it's required that I do have to do it. And so a moment of immense personal pressure fell upon his heart. And the sense of his inadequacy simply brought him to the place that he's caught in a vice. He was back there in Laban when God said to him, go back to the land. If he didn't do that, he'd have to fight with God. If he does do that, he's going to fight with Esau. He's caught jammed between the two. And all his resources and the best gifts that he's got, he's already done what he can do. And he feels like now that's not enough. Have you ever been to a place like that in your life? I will never forget way back many years ago. It was Billy Graham that brought me to this country. And when I came over, I came on a student visa. I came over in early November, only to find out that school didn't open till the 1st of February in Minneapolis, and the American government wouldn't let me into the country. And the Canadian government told me I didn't even have a right to be in their country. I was not really welcome. I would not be allowed to be employed. And the British government told me I could only take £5 out with me. That translated, because the pound had just devaluated, was only $15. I had 3 months to live in the middle of winter. I had only $15. I knew nobody on the continent. I found myself alone. And I got as far as Toronto, found a home where they had stuck a single bed into an oversized closet. And they allowed me to sleep on that bed, paying them a minimum amount of money a week for staying there. And I can remember going to bed, and although I was past my 20th birthday, I can remember still, my eyes were wet and I wondered, why, God, where are you? Why am I in this mess? Have you ever been there? Have you ever come to the place where you know, I have nothing else I can do, it's lost for me? Where is God? Why isn't God doing something for me? How can I find God in the darkness like this? I've done my best, and my best is not enough, and I've come to the end of myself. Can you do anything to help me? I believe it was in somewhat the same way that a thorn was given that went into the side of Paul. And he got down on his knees and he prayed. And he said to the Lord, take it away. And the Lord simply replied to him, my grace is sufficient for you, and my strength is made perfect in your weakness. And then you learn, though I speak with the tongues of men and angels and have not love, I have become like a sounding brass and a tinkling cymbal. Have you ever been to a place like that? The timing is precise. He is the victim. God has ambushed him. And at 97 years past in his life, he's come to the place where he suddenly realized the heel catcher's skill is not enough. I need something more. That brings me then to my second thought. What is it that happened to him? Because it's simply given to us, and I would suggest that there are three important stages that go with the analysis of what it was that happened to him. The first thing that happened to him was there was a wrestling of a man. You remember, he took his wife and his women folk, his wives and his women folk and his children. And he took them all in the darkness to Ford Jabbok. And then there was that little emotional scene where he's commending them to God and he's hoping that whatever the outcome of this experience will be, that they somehow would be safe. They're away from the rest and his priorities were all in place. But they may have hugged each other and kissed. Joseph at this time was only 6 years of age. And he sends them all across into the darkness. And he stands there at one end of the ford while they make their way across. And he listens in the night when he can't see them any longer and waits until he finds out they've got safely on the other side. And then he's alone. He's so alone that maybe it was the weight of a foot on a twig behind him. Maybe it was the touch of a garment against the bush. And he turned around, and here in the darkness is the silhouette of that man standing in front of him. And his only conclusion is he saw. And immediately they rushed at each other. And they tried to get an advantage for the physical position. And he happened to get the advantage. And he wrestled. What is wrestling? Well, the word wrestling, according to Kiel and Dietsch, is to contract oneself, to plant limb and limb firmly together. It's a different kind of fighting. It's the kind of fighting where you can't keep your opponent at a distance. You only gain the advantage of the opponent by closeness. and you take the limbs and weave them around each other and exert pressure. That's the kind of fighting it requires. There was an old English Anglo-Saxon word, Wesleyan, and that Wesleyan is the word from which we get the word to rest, W-R-E-S-T, the same one that we get the word wrist from, the same word we get the word wreath from. It means to twist, to turn. And that's what happened in this experience. Paul speaks about, we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but he's not using the word that communicates the same thought. We know that because he said, put on the whole armor of God. In this one, you can't. You've got to become so close to your opponent that you can feel the pressure of his muscles. You can feel the pumping of his heart and his breath falls on your shoulder. Too many of us want to fight with God at the distance, and we're not able and willing to get up close to him and to become intimate in the struggle. In the wrestling experience, that does happen. The second thing that happened to him was the touch. He had obviously gotten the upper hand on his opponent, but one arm evidently was free. And it was somewhere, although we don't know what kind of a hold he had on the opponent, we know that the arm was leaning down and it was possible for him to move the hand. And he took his finger, and with his finger, he didn't ram, he didn't punch, he touched Jacob's thigh. And Jacob's thigh went immediately out of joint. Isn't that something? The heel catcher got crippled, and a little bit of Jacob died in him. Just like the piano player who for the first time feels the arthritis coming in a hand. It's like the rich man that for the first time in his life lost a crop. It's like the healthy man who discovered the first sign of leprosy. The heel catcher was touched, and his leg, because in wrestling the movement of weight requires that you have both limbs able to move, and one of them for a moment is crippled. And so what can he do? He simply held on the more tenaciously to the opponent in front of him, and then began to realize that touch didn't come from Esau. Who is this stranger in the dark? I mean, where have I come? What has happened to me? And he held on with a harder grip. But inside him, something snapped. There's his helplessness, and here's the circumstance that he's facing. And it happens to a lot of us. It came to him where it dawned on him. It's not an ordinary experience. It's not a common average thing that is happening. I think this other person is the angel of the covenant. I wanted Abraham's blessing. Now I've got a hold of Abraham's blesser. Oh, this is altogether a different experience. Do you remember Elisha coming back to Jordan when the chariots had taken Elijah? And he took his mantle and waved it in the air. And then he let out a cry, where is the God of Elijah? He didn't ask for Elijah. He didn't ask for another Billy Sunday, another D.L. Moody, another George Whitfield. He simply asked for the God that gave these men the power they had. The God that infused the strength into Abraham, his grandfather. And here he is, and he's got that God, as it were, beside him. Which brings me to the third thing that happened in this experience of what took place. And that I have to go to the book of Hosea to get the answer for it. In Hosea 12, in verse 1 through verse 4. Suffice it to say, it just simply says, he wept. and made supplication unto him. He's got the upper hand. He's got a vice grip on his opponent. But the moment the opponent put his finger out and touched his thigh, and this inside him collapsed, then he started crying. And then he started praying. What a confusing situation, in a way. I believe Isaac knew something about that. For when the boy's not yet being born, and God had said to him, the elder shall serve the younger, and he had lived his life in reckless abandonment to what God had said. And then came that moment when Jacob went into his presence and disguise stole the birthright. And then it tells us in Genesis 27:32, Isaac his father said unto him, because Esau had come back from the fields, and Isaac his father said unto him, who art thou? And he said, I am thy son, thy firstborn Esau. And Isaac trembled very exceedingly and said, who? All I can say is, that one moment it dawned upon Isaac, I fought God with carnal advantages, thinking I had my opponent in my grip, only to find out that in the last moment he had me. Have you ever had that experience? I wish to declare to you, on the authority of this book and in the deepest sentiment of my heart, that men who've not come to an encounter with God such as this are still carnal men. And they're manipulating life in their selfish power. And they don't realize it, but they need God to take them where the circumstances are manipulated by Him. And they come to the end of themselves and they discover the greatness of their God. We need that. Let me just conclude by reference as to why this happened to them. I believe you remember the stranger said, let me go because the day breaketh. It's the breaking of the day. There's a little thing that is said about God. If you could just take a kindly version of it. When the morning was coming and the Israel had safely crossed and the Egyptians were coming in the Red Sea chasing after them, it's as though God peeped through the pillar of cloud and the pillar of fire and saw the Egyptians and dismayed them. Let me go because the day breaketh. And Jacob, broken and defeated and frustrated and concerned, but with an upper hand, isn't that something unusual? I mean, a carnal man holding God in his grasp. And Jacob said, I will not let thee go except thou bless me. What do you want, Jacob? What are you after? Haven't you lived your 97 years in order to be able to get the blessing that comes through Abraham? What are you after now? Now that's not enough. Now I want something that in spite of my talents and in spite of my gifts and in spite of what it is that I've got that can help me to do something for God, now I want the power of God to be on my life. That's what we're after. I'll just close by saying, all of it came to him in the changing of a name. What is your name? He said, my name is Jacob. Heel catcher, carnal supplanter. Thy name shall be called no more Jacob, but Israel. Can I tell you what G. Campbell Morgan said about Israel? He said, it does not mean prince. Neither does it mean one who has power with God, save that that may be a deduction from what it really means. These Hebrew words occur through the Bible, made up in some way with the name of God ending them. Israel. It means God governed, God mastered. That's what he was after. The hymn writer said, "Make me a captive, Lord, and then I shall be free. Force me to render up my sword, and I shall conqueror be. I sink in life's alarms when by myself I stand. Imprison me within thine arms, and strong shall be my hand." I just ask you a very personal question. Have you ever been to Penuel? Have you ever been to the place where your human talents, techniques, and skills are just not enough, and you beg for something greater than all of them put together? Oh, that I might be mastered by God and have the power of God in my life. That's what I need. And I need it.